I'm Valerie Ziegler-Morris, and this is a session entitled Love Me Tender, Elvis and the Incarnation.
Oh, I think you gotta talk basically.
And I thought it might be appropriate to get us in the mood just to have a sort of a little trivia contest here, just some questions. You'll understand that this is just minimal Elvis knowledge. This does not approach what a fan would actually know, but a few questions for you. How many people still live in Graceland?
One.
Yes, and the person's name is?
Oh, this is Aunt.
Uh-huh, Aunt Delta.
Aunt Delta.
Aunt Delta came, in the late 60s when her husband died, and Elvis told her just to stay at the place till she was ready to go. And she's not yet. So. She's still there. All right, more technical. How did Graceland get its name? Well, if you'd ever gone on the tour, you would know. Elvis bought Graceland from a doctor and the doctor's wife. And they had built the place in the 30s and named it after their Aunt Grace. So all right, who owns Graceland?
What?
Who owns Graceland?
For a foundation.
Okay, it's a foundation until?
Lisa Marie is 21.
25.
That's
and then it all belongs to Lisa Marie. After
Lisa
that.
Maria.
Oh, daughter.
Lisa Marie's daughter.
Priscilla and Elvis's daughter.
Also, Lisa Marie is the name of Elvis's large jet.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I remember.
Which you can also tour.
How old is Lisa now?
She's 21, I think, and she lives in California with Priscilla, her mother.
She's an actress.
Mm-hmm. And Elvis was actually pretty careful when Priscilla was little not to let her picture get into the press. Okay, here's one. What labels did Elvis record under?
Sun.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Who was Elvis's manager?
Tom Parker.
Colonel Parker.
Yeah, right. Tom Parker played basketball for Kentucky in the 60s. Yeah. Who first wrote and performed Blue Suede Shoes?
Eddie Cochran.
Carl Perkins.
How can we use Blue Suede Shoes to illustrate Original Sin?
You can do anything, but don't take off those blue suede shoes. Yeah. They kind of give you a choice, okay, you can do this, but don't take off the blue suede shoes.
Don't step on them.
You can knock me down, step on my face, slander my name all over the place, do anything you want to do, but honey, lay off of them shoes. Why? Well, what happens when you step on blue suede shoes? Or
more
suede
black.
Shoes? Yeah.
I get messed up.
Yeah, and can you fix them? No, not really. And therein is the parallel to Original Sin.
Water bottle?
Yeah, it's that kind of parallel that makes our life interesting. Let's see. Why does Elvis's greatest fan live in Holly Springs, Mississippi? No, it's not where he was born. In Tupelo. No, it's because Holly Springs is halfway between Tupelo, where Elvis was born, and Memphis, where Elvis died. Name and correct spelling of Elvis's middle name.
Aaron, A-A-R-O-N.
Well, that's how it is on the tombstone, but actually, on the birth certificate, it's A-R-O-N. And his father said that they just didn't know how to spell back then. Okay, finally, Elvis only won 2 Grammys. For what?
How Great Thou Art.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And another inspirational song.
Yeah, I think it might be He Touched Me, I'm not sure. No, it wasn't Viva Las Vegas.
Amazing Grace.
It might have been Amazing Grace.
Yeah.
But his only two Grammys were for gospel numbers, and I think that we'll find that to be significant.
Elvis' father still living?
No.
No. Yeah, he died. They're all buried around the pool. Including his grandmother, Minnie Mae. And also his twin brother. I don't know if everybody realizes that Elvis was a twin. His twin was dead at birth. But I don't find that significant. Okay, my experience of Elvis. I must confess that I never really cared that much. I mean, of course I cared, but never that much about Elvis until I moved to Memphis. And I happened to move to Memphis in the middle of August when you can't breathe or move hardly. But that's luckily the week of International Tribute Week. And let's see, I moved there during the 8th International Tribute Week. And it's really fun to watch the people from Britain try to get around in 90 plus degree weather in Memphis. Quite a trip. And my main reaction was that, I mean, tens of thousands of people come to Memphis for the Tribute Week. And it's something. A local writer has called it the Mecca of Red Mecca. Oh, many, many pickups come to town. And so at first I just, like, you know, all the sophisticated academics, I thought I was too good for it. And I ignored it. In fact, I was in Memphis for a whole year before I even went to Graceland. And the reason I went was my sister came to visit, and she had the Paul Simon album, and it was like her theme for her visit. So we went to Graceland, and one of the things I noticed there was that the tourist shops are replete with possibilities. And she and I went on a rainy day, not in the ghetto, actually. Elvis's place is in the middle of many, many car dealerships now.
Elvis Motors?
Elvis Motors. God. There is an Elvis. No, it's a Graceland Honda. But a seed was planted in my mind, and so later that year, right before Christmas time, I returned to the Graceland Plaza to buy gifts for those about whom I cared deeply. And the one thing I haven't bought yet, because it's quite expensive, but I really would like to buy, is a book by Elvis's nurse called I Called Him Babe. But I haven't bought that one yet, because I wanted to give out many gifts. And so I had to gravitate toward the cheaper ones. Nothing is cheap, but some things are cheaper. And I was settling on keychains because I thought, well, you know, it's a practical gift that people could use and delight their workers with, that kind of thing. And so I was trying to buy some keychains that they had pictures of Elvis on two sides. And I have never really been, I suppose, physically attracted to the older Elvis. The bloated, drug-ridden Elvis. So I thought I would buy keychains with pictures of the younger, more attractive Elvis. And what I discovered was that it was impossible to do that. You couldn't buy a keychain that had two sides of the young, attractive Elvis. You could buy keychains with two bloated Elvises on them, or a young Elvis and an old Elvis, but no, just young Elvis. And so I asked myself, why? And then last August, my sister came back for a joyful reunion. My mother came down as well. And we went to Elvis International Tribute Week to discover why. Why the bloated Elvis? And, well, it's hard to describe exactly Elvis International Tribute Week. I can tell you some of the things that go on. Every morning at Graceland Plaza, right next to Lisa Marie and Hound Dog 2, his two planes, Graceland sponsors a trivia contest, which is sort of like, what's that show, Jeopardy. And people from the audience are chosen, and they write out their answers, and it's very, very technical stuff. Also, then during the afternoons at this club, sort of, called The Vapors nearby, they have the impersonator contests, and there are, naturally, there's a series of runoffs before you even begin to get to the finals, and that pretty much takes 10 days to do that. Oh, there was a twist-off, an Elvis twist-off contest downtown one Friday night. There was an Elvis Blue Hawaii Luau and Barbecue Pig Out. There was the 5K run. There was a Circle of Friendship, Circle of Love, Dude Ranch Journey. To Elvis's ranch in Mississippi. There's an Elvis Memorial Karate Tournament. We dedicated the auditorium at Humes Junior High School, which when Elvis lived in Memphis was a high school, and he went there. And it is actually in the ghetto. But the high school, the junior high is smart enough to know that people will pay to go to the high school. And so they do. People, they give tours. You can sit in the cafeteria where Elvis ate. Stand on the stage where Elvis first performed. The dedication that I went to lasted several hours. And it was extremely hot. And for some reason, they had the windows closed and covered. That added to it, I think. The sound system didn't work at all. But people came and stayed, and the Jordanaires performed. The Jordanaires were
the band.
His backup. The Humes Junior High people performed. People came and did their impression of Elvis. Not so much imitating, but as just giving impressions of how he had touched their life. Another really fun thing to go to was the Graceland is not far from the airport either. And so there are a lot of chain hotels there, and that's where fans stay, or that's the best place to stay. And the Days Inn is like a three-story quadrangle. If you stay at the Days Inn, you participate in the window decorating contest. And so the Days Inn turns into a collage of Elvis as each person does what Elvis meant to them in their window, and that's really good. And then the most famous thing is the candlelight vigil on the night in which Elvis died. And that takes forever. I waited in line 5 hours before I was able to go past the grave. They close off Elvis Presley Boulevard, and it becomes a family of people who stand for hours. There was a Swiss delegation in front of me, a Japanese delegation behind me. We saw a few Finns carrying their little flags. Tons of British people, the Brits, everyone calls them. It's really funny. It starts off with Elvis's Aunt Delta and his Uncle Vester, who carry the first candles to the meditation garden, which is next to the swimming pool. And you have to walk up a driveway, a pretty long driveway, up a hill to get there. And everybody just sat around and stood and you know, they paid their respects or whatever. I mean, the thing is, you know, they can go there anytime they want, and they're really mystified by the whole thing, but they know they have to go up there and carry the candle, so they do. And then after they're done, everyone else gets to go by, but there are so many, there are thousands and thousands of people. It takes all night. And also people, of course, send flowers. And there are always flowers at Elvis's grave, any time, any day that you would go. But there are thousands and thousands of assorted arrangements. Lots of them like guitars, but I mean, just anything you can imagine. And, you know, again, I'm trying to figure out why do people like the bloated Elvis. I'm trying to get into this. There's also a midnight memorial service that the Elvis Country Fan Club traditionally holds during this vigil. So I was listening to what people were saying. Almost all of the impersonators dress as the older Elvis, mm-hmm. perhaps mm. because they are all older too. Although there are many young people there, but everybody just, you'll see around town people with black hair sort of flipped back and aviator sunglasses. It's a very common costume. Men at the vigil talked a lot about Elvis meant everything to me. You hear a lot of that kind of language. Women often said things like, I love him more than I love my husband. Something for you married men to think about. Everyone talked a lot about Elvis brought love into our world, or Elvis taught us how to love. And a lot of talk about Elvis still brings love, or Elvis is still present to us, bringing us love. There is an eternal flame at his grave, which tells us many things. One of which that Elvis now lives with God, but that his spirit is with us. And in fact, there's a lot of return imagery going on, that Elvis was with God, then Elvis was with us, now Elvis is with God, but his spirit, and it's always a spirit of love, is now with us forever. And in fact, people sort of have a schizophrenic feeling about Elvis. On the one hand, he was Elvis the pelvis, you know, and an incredibly attractive person to many people, especially sexually, I think. On the other hand, Elvis was always the good boy who loved his mother and sang gospel music. So there's always, people are balancing these two things off. One of my friends at Rhodes, who teaches in the history department, had friends from out of town come to Memphis during the tribute week, and he said it was the most humiliating experience of his life, because you can't help but notice all this. And again, you see just a lot of sort of overweight people walking around in black leather jackets and aviator sunglasses, and people wearing t-shirts. I mean, even this is definitely a later Elvis t-shirt. Just bloated Elvises or Elvi. And my friend, who is not a Christian, said, beyond being humiliated, he felt as though people were trying to nail the bloated Elvis to the cross. And that's where I'd like to enter into our incarnational reflections. If you go to the Days Inn, I mean, really, take a day to look at the windows when you go, and I know that you all will. One of the artifacts that was helpful to me was a story about Elvis that was on one of the windows. And the story goes something like, in the beginning, Elvis was in heaven with God. And God looked down upon the world and saw that people were suffering and in need. And so God sent Elvis to sing a song and help people come to love one another. And so Elvis was obedient to God's wishes, and he did this. And at first, everybody really liked Elvis. They thought Elvis was wonderful. But then people began to be bored with it. They started to turn away from Elvis. And Elvis himself began to experience, well, the difficulties that come with rejection. And basically his life fell apart. But he didn't give up trying. He kept singing that song of love. And eventually he died, sure that his career was in ruins and that he had failed God utterly. And he returned to God, replete with apologies and self-abasement. But God said to Elvis, "My son, my obedient son, don't you realize that you sang the song as well as anybody could among a sinful generation?" And I think, all right, this is where I begin to draw connections. I think that no one would go to Elvis's grave, and no one would care about Elvis if there weren't that double dynamic about him. On the one hand, Elvis is very approachable. He's not like I think even here, it's been my experience that when there are a lot of guests here and a famous speaker comes and talks, people would sort of like, after the teaching session, to approach that person, but they feel often shy and hesitant to do so because the person is famous, obviously really articulate and eloquent, and you just feel like, you know, you're sort of nobody and you can't talk to the person. I remember last year, someone came up to one of the teaching staff and said, "Oh, gosh, I was so thrilled to listen and hear what you had to say." And the person said, "Oh, well, thank you. What's your name?" And the guest said, "Oh, I don't matter. I'm nobody. But I just wanted to thank you." And then she ran off because she couldn't, you know, it just, she didn't feel comfortable. But Elvis is approachable because Elvis suffered so much. People, if Elvis hadn't suffered and just gone to hell, basically, I don't think that people would be interested in him the way they are. Of course, the other side of it is that Elvis was charismatic. Elvis was physically attractive to many people. Elvis is an American success story. You know, starts in poverty, ends in a fabulously wealthy life. He is what we think America is in terms of opportunity. But he's also enormously weak and approachable. And if we were to apply scriptures to that, here are some that occur to me. "The true light that enlightens everyone was in the world, but the world knew him not. He came to his own home, and his own people received him not. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God." Being in the Elvis Country Fan Club is a special kind of thing. People blame themselves for the fact that fame just was too much for Elvis. They say, you know, no one could have lived a normal life after what happened to Elvis. People ruined Elvis. Stephen's speech in Acts 7, "You stiff-necked people, which of the prophets did your ancestors not persecute? Now you have murdered and betrayed the righteous one." Or Isaiah 53, "He was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Upon him was the chastisement that made us whole." Now, okay, and we all know that those passages aren't about Elvis. Well, maybe we should take a reality check here. But I think they really do describe the dynamic of why what people feel happened to Elvis and how it touches their lives. Maybe we should talk about that for a minute. I have some additional theological reflections, but perhaps this would be a good place for you to do some talking out of your own experience of Elvis, however rich or shallow.
Well, this is pretty obvious from what I knew, I guess. Anyway, I was never a really, really big Elvis fan, but when you go to Memphis, you gotta go to Graceland. I mean, I went down to the Liberty Bowl, but Graceland was certainly the another thing to do during the day. But anyway, it was it was kind of a moving experience. I mean, here you go back there where all the graves are laid out by the pool, and it's just I don't know. I saw a different side of him because I didn't know before I got there that. I thought he won Grammys for something like for Heartbreak Hotel or Hound Dog or some of those other songs. And I had no idea he won Grammys for a couple of inspirational songs. I thought that was really neat. His house is really, it's kind of gaudy in a way, but yet it's, the garden area is really so peaceful. So it's kind of a contrast. Let's see. Oh, the pink Cadillac that he gave to his mother, that's still there.
She couldn't even drive.
Right, yeah. And the other thing I found out, he was a very, very generous person. I don't know. It's hard for me to say the motivation, if it was a Christian motivation, just a motivation to give to charity, but he was involved quite a bit. I think he gave a lot of money to what, Boys Club?
Yeah, actually, Elvis made Christmas for Memphis Charities. My mother-in-law actually was working as a social worker in Memphis while Elvis was alive, and she said that at Christmas time, they just made lists and told Elvis what they needed, and that's what he gave them. And I mean, he was very generous with many, many charities in Memphis, and as your guide will tell you, he never took that off on his taxes because Elvis felt that a gift should be from the heart and not give you a tax break. But yeah, actually, he was, when Elvis died, things changed at Christmas for a lot of poor kids.
But anyway, that's about
what
I
thought. How much of a trust did he leave, or what's the status of his?
That kind of thing they don't tell you. Although it's quite clear that Elvis made far less per album than almost anybody who's ever made it big, and the person who got much of the money was Colonel Parker. Elvis also, he never toured in Europe or in Asia, and Colonel Parker appears to be the reason for that too. Didn't want to be bothered with the traveling. So Elvis was very comfortable. Don't get me wrong. But
he had three TV sets in one room, so all mounted in the wall, so that he could watch all three newscasts simultaneously or football games.
Yeah.
So he was really into football.
Yeah, he got the idea from Lyndon Johnson. He used to watch all three newscasts at once.
Elvis had, I remember reading something about Elvis where he had all these police badges or something.
It's true, yeah. Elvis, this is wonderful. Elvis had the power of arrest in Memphis and somewhere else. And yeah, everywhere he went, people found out that more than the key to the city, he really liked being made an honorary sheriff or whatever. And he had a lot of guns, pistols mainly. I don't really know what he did with them, but he did have a lot of them.
Collected them,
yeah, and he liked having the power of arrest.
Right.
Well,
just sort of a cultural note that I would like to raise. I don't know if you're going to cover this, but I think that we need to look at and seriously think about the fact that when they rededicated the Statue of Liberty, what was that, 2 summers ago, how was the ceremony started? 200 Elvis imitators.
That's right.
200 Elvis right. imitators at the same time. At the same time in
Are you
the,
kidding?
No. Did you remember that?
I wasn't here.
Oh, my God. Oh, God, yes. Did the,
what did they do?
Like, the firework. They sang. They marched really? In there and
like
they
a
did.
Like chorus or something?
Yes. Yes, they were part of the big rededication ceremony right after Ronald Reagan. The next thing that happened was 200 Elvis imitators. So, you know, maybe we should also look at the effect of Elvis on the American culture.
American,
that we would identify Elvis with the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, you know?
And Elvis will set you free.
And Elvis lives. So I just thought I'd throw that image out in case anyone happened to miss it. And it
fits with.
So we might take a little something to get up for the concert, but Elvis did not take drugs. Little things that you and I, you know, might also do if we were under that kind of stress.
Yeah.
Bill, were you going to say something? Did I cut you off?
No, I just said there was something about he died alone and nobody found him for whatever time. You know, I said, in other words, he was mortal. That's all I said.
That's true. But again, I think perhaps that's one thing if we want to think about Elvis as an incarnation of love. I do think that Elvis fans at least understand that Elvis was human in a way that Christians could think about more. That Elvis was mortal, he was fallible, he suffered in a real way. It's not like Tammy Faye's cosmic shopping trip to the mall kind of Christianity or faith. Elvis was mortal. The early church had a saying that God became what we are, that we might become what God is. And they were convinced that unless the incarnation were really true, that Jesus actually experienced all that it is to be human, then Jesus in no way was Savior. Because the way that God saves us is by becoming what we are and then lifting us up to what God is. And I do think that Elvis fans have a sense of that in some ways far more than Christians do of Jesus. We talk about gentle Jesus, meek and mild, or Jesus as, I don't know, really some sort of kind of Gnostic figure who goes through life and never much experiences anything. Or is in complete control of his life, knows everything that will happen, cries for us in the garden so we'll get a sense of what real pain is, but Jesus knew it was all going to come out right and didn't really worry about it. And I think that often we don't have a sense at all of Jesus as human and of someone who really suffered and became what we are. I think that at least Elvis fans do have that. We can learn from them in that way. Elvis is approachable in his suffering, and that is part of what makes him magnificent in his redemption. Well, at least, I mean, I really think if Elvis hadn't gotten old and bloated, that none of this would be happening.
What do you mean old?
Well, Elvis was old before his time. Like, chronologically, he wasn't that old.
Back,
yeah.
Probably about 65.
Elvis was an old 42. Paul Simon does end Graceland with poor boys and pilgrims with families. We all will be received in Graceland, and I people do feel that everyone can come to Graceland. Elvis is an approachable savior.
Oh, I was curious why, you know, drawing the parallel to make a suffering hero is why Marilyn Monroe, for instance, has not developed that same kind of
She's a woman.
She stars in one of my favorite movies, Something Like It Hot.
Well, we were talking about Marilyn Monroe, and that I've noticed in the students that in urban studies, young women, 18, 19 years old, Marilyn Monroe, I see Marilyn Monroe photographs in more of our urban studies housing than anything else. They really are into Marilyn Monroe, and they're into Marilyn Monroe as sort of this figure of, this fascinating figure who was trapped by sort of the sexist society, and blah, 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 blah. I had one of my students sit and talk to me for about half an hour about what Marilyn Monroe means to her. So, I mean, it's true, but there's no pilgrimages made to the hotel room where she OD'd.
Flowers are placed on her grave.
Yeah,
that's right.
And it is the same kind of dynamic. Yeah. You know, someone who comes from nowhere.
Goodbye, Norma Jean.
Yeah, and makes it big, but in the process of making it big is destroyed by the very things that gave them fame.
I'm sure they have, the Elvis fan, and try to examine really what this religion means to them. Is this an alternative or an overlay?
I think it's an overlay.
So these are...
I think it's an overlay, but it's far more intense than whatever their other religion is, probably some kind of Christianity. And to be honest, I mean, I think having gone through some of it, I do have a much stronger concrete sense of Elvis than I do of Jesus. Of course, I've seen Elvis and haven't seen Jesus. But it's way more powerful than going to church. Also, you don't get to do it every week. You know, just once a year at the big week in August. And then if you're real devoted, you can come back for his birthday in January. But I've never been to Graceland when someone didn't cry at the grave. Well, it's very powerful in some ways.
If it's true, and I don't think I know for sure, but if it's true, as someone has told me, that Elvis's rise to fame was initiated by two producers who dared each other to look at this kid who was playing a guitar, who was a trucker, and say, I can make him a, is that true? I can make him a hero, I can make him a first-class singer. And the other one said, I dare you, and so they are the ones who launched his career. It makes it even more sad, because he was a real tool, if that was the case, of these money-making.
Tom Parker was the brains. I mean,
figured it out. Elvis actually was very grateful to the people at Sun Records. And they felt that they were paid well when RCA bought out the contract. One of the things that Colonel Parker did was, remember, Elvis was drafted and went to Germany. Well, naturally, the Army offered him the opportunity of just being like a traveling Bob Hope or something. And Colonel Parker said, no, we don't give it for free. They can wait. People can wait 2 years for Elvis to come back. We don't give the Army Elvis. And that's why he went into just regular stuff. But I do sort of get the sense that Elvis actually felt at home in the Army. Yeah. Once people accepted him, that, he drew watch and did the stuff that everybody else did.
The anonymity of it.
That Elvis was just, a guy from Mississippi.
Yeah.
40 days in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Right.
Is Priscilla, his wife, is she one of his admirers? I don't think so.
No.
Not if you believe the Inquirer.
Well, they had that movie on not too long ago. Me and Elvis. Yeah.
I didn't watch it because I don't want my mind poisoned.
We turn on the TV in August, and when the networks are on, will we see you at Graceland?
Yeah, you probably will.
Right.
Somebody in Memphis came up with this incredible thing that they did on the local access channel. You know how on that channel, you're liable to get anything. Lots of times, just weird to me. Preachers, you know, talking to people in television land and trying to get them to do whatever. They made up this preacher who was preaching to an invisible congregation, and all you had to do to be saved was accept Elvis as your personal Lord and Savior. It was interesting.
Well, I mean, to add into this, somebody said again this morning while we were doing 12 hours that there was an Oprah Winfrey show on not long ago about the various theories of the fact that Elvis is still alive. And that Elvis really didn't die, that Elvis is off in Canada, Elvis is in Hawaii, Elvis is resting, Elvis is doing all this stuff. So, I mean, that throws, like, we've got the death and the resurrection here.
Yeah. Now, to what extent, when you look at the folks who come to Memphis for these things, are you really talking about an identifiable subset of the American population? Is it, to what degree is it sort of overwhelmingly white, working class, rural? You don't get many Jews down there, you don't get many blacks down there, you don't get many northern cities.
Oh yeah, New Jersey is there.
Is it a white working class phenomenon?
Yeah, it really feels as though it is, although that doesn't account for the foreigners, I think. And many, many foreigners do come. But, oh yeah, I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said you see a lot of pickups. You do see a lot of pickups with, you know, jacked up on the high wheels and a lot of bands, and they all have Elvis things all over them. It doesn't feel like you feel when you go to the American Academy of Religion.
No, right. So partly you're describing the creation of a religion, mm-hmm. of a civil religion around a set of cultural icons and experiences that are based in the white working class, mm-hmm. who have very mm-hmm. few cultural icons, in fact,
yep.
right,
yep.
in our culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, who is there in American culture for white working class people to identify with? And what sort of myths do they have to then attach to their icons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I think you could run with that.
come at it more as a social scientist than as a theologian.
Maybe you could come down, we could work on this together.
Write a book, right?
Love
to
get some blues places too.
Well, that's the one thing that when Bell first talked about this at a dinner the other night, that I said was, you know, and Memphis has totally identified it with Graceland for so many people, and yet Memphis, you know, prior to Elvis is the throbbing heart of the blues, both you know, the Delta blues coming up and the beginning of urban blues, and you know, there's a statue of W.C. Handy and all that kind of stuff, but boy, Elvis has totally overshadowed it.
Yeah. Although down at Handy Park, especially in the summer, there will be blues bands just out playing.
Yeah.
Except during Elvis Week, and they are just banished to alleys. Yeah, Elvis music is pumped up, and that's where they have the twist-off contest, and you know, people just spontaneously do impersonations. But most of the time, you know, blues are it. Mm-hmm. It's still very vital.
Do you think that the business world really promotes this and keeps it going on?
Most people in Memphis are humiliated. Most people in Memphis have never even been to Graceland, and I don't know how much. I mean, certainly Graceland promotes it. I suspect they have copyrights on a lot of the mementos and stuff. I don't know.
I think you over here asked a question. I don't know if I got the answer or not. That somebody, they bet they can make him a star. Is there anything to that? Or did he have a manager when he sang that first song down there?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know my history well enough.
Back to the books.
Next back year. To the yeah, yeah. Next year.
The buzz up on.
Yeah.
This shows my name, the T on the subject, right? Who's marketing it? Who's receiving profits?
Graceland. Which is incorporated.
But who owns it?
Well, Lisa Marie will when she's 25.
Is it family then? Family that are actually behind it?
No, I don't think so. Maybe Priscilla. It's interesting. They've changed the way they give the tours up there. It used to be you'd get a guide and the guide would take you all the way through. And now they just stick guides in rooms and you go from one person to the next. So the guides don't really know anything except their room. But the first time I went, my guide was a believer. And we asked her somewhere in the middle, you know, well, what do you think will happen when Lisa Marie gets to be 25? Do you think she'll still keep Graceland open? Because there is some worry that actually she could close it and the whole industry will be gone. And my guide said, well, I hope that she does, because I think this whole thing is disrespectful of Elvis. Today, no guide would ever say that.
For some lost their job.
Yeah, they now know the party line much better.
Here's a good question, Nick. And what does the Elvis Foundation mean to Memphis in dollars a year? Tourists and stuff like that.
A lot. Graceland, 4,000 people a day on average go through Graceland.